This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, this is RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for joining me on this very bright, very sunny Monday afternoon, at least it is here in the southwest of the country. Time for an episode of the week in Iceland with Hallgrímur Indriðason, my colleague here at RÚV. And it is a very bright day today, isn't it? Everyone's complaining it's too warm.
Yeah,
I'm one of them.
Yeah, indeed. Well, it's we in Iceland call this winter weather because it's very bright, but it's not that warm actually.
No, but it's warmer than it has been. So
indeed, yeah. And we are waiting for spring to arrive, so I hope that should we get a sort of a proper temperature in the next few days.
First day of summer is a week on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And that's a day off in Iceland. That's a public holiday.
Yeah.
It snowed last year.
Yeah, and it's sort of been it's very strange to have the first day of summer when there really isn't summer, because it's more often than not it has been cold and not too decent weather in that day. But the biggest excitement is whether summer and winter will freeze together, because if there is a zero temp below zero. At midnight, actually, when the summer arrives, then it's supposed to point at a nice summer.
At a warmer summer, yeah. People leave a bowl of water out, don't they, to see if it freezes.
Yeah.
I'm still campaigning for the first day of winter to be a holiday.
Yeah.
First day of summer is. Why is not the first day of winter?
Yeah, well, first day of winter is always on a Saturday anyway, so...
Well, okay, so I'm getting the holiday anyway,
yeah.
Fair enough. All right, well, there's a lot going on in the world of politics, I think it is fair to say. We've got a presidential election coming up, which has been hugely enlivened by the fact that the Prime Minister of Iceland, of course, resigned a few days ago. Katrín Jakobsdóttir resigned so that she could run for the presidency. As things stand, and we'll do this in two bits, we'll deal with the government first. The governing party, she, of course, was the leader of one of those three governing parties. That coalition, as we sit here this afternoon, is still in place. It doesn't seem to be any sign that the government's going to collapse because Katrín has gone, but who knows?
Yeah, indeed. And this was a worry because Katrín has, she has sort of been looked at as sort of the glue that has connected this government or held it together. She has been the strong leader of this government. So there were worries what would happen when she left. There seemed to have been at least a good enough agreement to keep it together, at least for now. We will see, of course, what happens during the next weeks when they actually start working together, this new form of government. But as it looks now, the government is still functioning, and they aim to be functioning until the end of the term,
which is next autumn, next September.
It should be the last election was in September 21, so it should be September 25, although there are also opinions that we should move back to spring election, which was the tradition for decades.
It's slightly complicated because Katrín was the leader of the Left Greens, who were the third party, if you like, in the coalition in terms of popularity. The current opinion polls suggest that the Left Greens would struggle to even return to parliament come the next parliamentary election. Of course, that could all change, but they're not in a very strong position. And they now don't have the premiership either, because that's in the hands of Bjarni Benediktsson, who is the chair and the leader of the Independence Party, which is the most popular of the three parties. Mm-hmm. But he's not terribly popular himself either, at least if you look at this petition, which is available to sign. That the last time I looked earlier this morning, 41,000 Icelanders had signed a petition saying that they didn't want Bjarni to be prime minister. So you've gone from a relatively popular prime minister who was leading an unpopular party to an unpopular prime minister leading a more popular party.
Yeah, and you have to also point out that even though the Independence Party is the strongest in parliament right now, it is not in the polls. The Social Democrats have sort of overtaken them. Bjarni has, so the position of the party has weakened a bit also in the polls, and it has actually reached a historical low in some polls, around well below the below 20%, which is very low for that party.
Still a lot higher than Left Greens.
Yeah, but Bjarni Benediktsson being a controversial political figure is nothing new. He has been that for for a big part even since he took over as the leader of the Independence Party just after the financial collapse in 2009, because of his background in business. He participated in forming companies and running them before, and even also shortly after he became a parliamentarian, but he sort of withdrew after he became a political leader. But there are many people who think that this background in business has there are some things that are, he has some unfinished business there, and his part in many companies that had, that people believe that have had a big part in the Icelandic economy collapsing in 2008, they are not too keen on him being this political leader that he is. But despite this controversy, he has managed to maintain sort of a relative popularity and sort of shake off these controversies around him, and he has become a pretty strong political leader within his party.
Yes, so his base and his party's base are fine with him. We did mention the 41,000 people that have signed the petition. It's worth also just going back to last October, when he resigned from government because of his role in the sale of a national asset, or part of the sale of one of the national banks. That was obviously judged to be controversial enough for him to resign. Controversy around that point, when he immediately, he stayed in the cabinet. He simply swapped position, didn't he, with the then foreign minister. And now he's gone from that position of having to resign, but not really, to becoming prime minister. So, I mean, from the outside, you can see why some people in Iceland are going to say he's never really taken the hit for having to resign. If he's now PM.
Exactly. So the consequences are not huge if you look at it in that way, and also he has been prime minister once before.
Yes.
That lasted 8 months when one of the parties that he worked with back then sort of blew the government up on a certain issue. So he hasn't been that successful as a prime minister, but we will see what happens now. But I think because we want to compare ourselves to the Scandinavian countries, and I think this kind of sort of procedure, a resigned finance minister becoming prime minister a few months later, I don't think that would ever happen in countries like Norway, Sweden and Denmark that we want to compare ourselves
to. I'll tell you where it would happen. It would happen in the United Kingdom. And I feel that I've been responsible for importing some of this chaos. It's my fault.
I wouldn't be too sure about that.
Okay. A political scientist or analyst called Oliver Harðason, speaking to Rúv, saying that if this government does collapse between now and, say, next September, which is how long it has to run before the election, it might be down to the Left Greens, who don't really disagree with the other two parties that much, maybe on immigration policy, but on other issues not that much. But tactically, they might think to themselves, well, we've got nothing left to lose here. If we're the ones who collapse the government, then we might get some credit for that. We might get some credit for removing this apparently unpopular prime minister as prime minister. He thinks that's the only way, really, that this, or one way at least, that this government could fall if it does.
Yeah, that was an interesting theory. And of course, I can't exclude that. But on the other hand, you would have to think they would have to do it in a way that they would sort of ensure that they would get more votes than the polls indicate that they will get now. So they would have to, I would assume, look stronger. And also With Katrín Jakobsdóttir gone, they're not only losing the prime minister, the party is losing a very, very strong leader. The Left Greens have only been around for 25 years. They were founded in 99. And there have only been two leaders. That was Steingrímur Jósefsson and then Katrín. Mm. Both of them very strong leaders. And the big question is, do they have anyone as strong as those two? To sort of lead them through this difficulties that they are going through. The smart ones are pointing to Svandís Svavarsdóttir, who was Minister of Fisheries and Agriculture and has now been moved to Minister of Infrastructure, which is a very big big ministry. They are looking at her, but not the vice president.
But doesn't she have a no confidence motion chasing her?
Yes,
because of her decision that she took, which was found to be contrary to procedure over whaling last year.
Yeah,
the leader of the People's Party has not ruled out continuing to pursue this motion of no confidence against
her. Yeah, even though she has now changed ministries.
Yes.
So that will be maybe create some difficulties for Svandís. And that is maybe when you look at the parliamentarians currently within the Left Greens, which are good parliamentarians, but the big question is any of them a strong enough leader to follow Katrin's footsteps? And that will be a big challenge for anyone.
Well, let's talk about Katrin, because, of course, the reason that she has resigned is to be fair, she said she wanted to do it anyway, but she has now decided to run for the presidency. The latest opinion polling has her and her main opposition, you might say at this stage, Baldur Þórhallsson, at around the same level of support. Baldur's on 26%, Katrin on 22%, but that's within the margin of error. Jón Gnarr in third place, Hallahrund Logadóttir above 10% for the first time as well. So the race is, I was going to say it's tightening, but you've actually got more people coming in towards the bottom end. This was maybe a three-horse race, it's maybe a four-horse race now.
Yeah, we have seen in the previous presidential election that things can change pretty quickly. That they did that in 2012 when Þóra Arnórsdóttir was leading the race against Ólafur Ragnar Grímsson, which was the incumbent president. Then around maybe a month before, 1.5 months before the election, things changed and Ólafur won pretty convincingly. So there is a lot of things that will happen before the election on June 1st. But at least it looks like it will be a very exciting election. It looked like it was becoming, shall we say, kind of a joke at first because there were very few candidates at the beginning that people really believed could succeed Guðni as president properly. Yeah.
And all the polls were saying, we want him to stay on.
Yeah.
They were saying, well, I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm not running
and
again.
I think in one of the first polls in January, I think only one candidate had over 1% of the votes. But now things are changing. We have quite a few people that the Icelandic voters seem to believe are capable of taking over. So this will be exciting, and maybe the interesting thing is that there were many that thought that if Katrin would run, she would win by a landslide. But as it looks now, that is not the case.
No, it's anyone's to play for. I'm just looking back at some of the electoral history. For example, someone who's in the race this time, getting 4.3% in this latest poll from Procent, is Halla Tómasdóttir, who ran in 2016, forgive me.
Yeah.
So 8 years ago, two contests ago, she ran against Guðni in that contest. She started with 1% in that contest in the polls, and she ended up getting just under 28% on the day. So it just shows you that this really can all change, doesn't it?
Yes, it can, and that is, of course, that is the exciting part with this election. And one colleague of mine pointed out that these are, which is maybe another subject, but these are the only election that every Icelander gets the equal amount of votes, which because in the parliamentary election the votes are uneven. The constituencies outside the capital area sort of have more value than than in the capital area.
In terms of electing the parliament overall.
But now it's, but in the presidential election, it is completely equal.
One person, one vote. Did you see the eclipse last week, last Monday? Partial eclipse.
No, I was pretty much working all day, so I didn't have a chance to look outside. But so I only saw it on TV.
Yes. Well, it was quite dramatic here because I think a lot of people in America were a bit annoyed that that path of totality across Mexico, America into Canada, a lot of people along that giant strip had cloudy conditions. Oh. Now, here it was only a partial eclipse, 42-43% or something, but it was really sunny.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So you could see, or you could see a lot of the sun being eclipsed by the moon last week. The next big one, of course, is 2026.
Yeah, and that is already being prepared, I understand.
Yes, yeah. The total eclipse in the west. If you're up in, I think Olavsvik is probably the best play. I don't want to send everyone there and, you know, completely crash the Airbnb market.
Yeah, but of course, then if it's difficult to prepare something like this in America, it's very, very difficult to do it in Iceland because you can never count on the weather.
No. But it is due to be in the middle of August, I think, in 2026. So it's a better chance of seeing it then than in January or February, I suppose.
Yeah.
But even if it's cloudy, if you've got a total eclipse, everything still goes completely dark. The birds go quiet and you get this very eerie sensation. And of course, in Iceland at that time, we'll be close to 24-hour daylight, or certainly, you know, 20, 21 hours of daylight.
Yeah, roughly, yeah.
In August. And so whenever it strikes, it's going to be pretty impressive, I would think.
I hope so. I hope it will be something to remember.
Yes, I hope so too. I want to turn to, if I may, what's happening in Ísafjörður. New regulations mean that only maximum of 5,000 visitors a day on the cruise ships will come into Ísafjörður. That's still more than the whole population of the town.
There have been, very especially in these I'm not sure if I could say smaller towns, because if you look at the whole town, I think Ísafjörður is at least on the top 10 of size of towns in Iceland. There are worries that there are these are too many people that only stop for a short period of time. I know it was a big worry in Akureyri, that where people were even doubting that these kind of tourists would leave that much to the community financially wise. They would maybe go on trips, short trips, or they would just go for a few hours and shop. They would really not. They're not using the overnight facilities. Yeah, they're just sleeping in the ships. So there have been doubts that these tourists are sort of leaving that much value because it sort of overwhelms maybe the infrastructure for a short period of time, and then they just leave. But I would say that there must be sort of ways to deal with it, and it would be interesting to see how this comes out for Ísafjörður. If they manage this better, it might turn out to be something that other municipalities could try to do.
I've not been to Ísafjörður in the summer when those cruise ships have been in in dock, if that's the right word to use, in the harbour, but they are enormous.
Yeah, I haven't been to Ísafjörður, but I have been to Akureyri when the cruise ships that have come there are extremely big, and you can't help noticing these tourists. There are extremely many and all around, and you notice them.
200 ships will visit this year with almost 200,000 visitors. Now, that's more than half the population of Iceland. Yeah. Just visiting this small town in the northwest, in the Westfjords. Mm-hmm. Gylfi Olafsson, who's the chair of the town council, says that the town does benefit from the arrival of the cruise ships, but we now have, with this new policy, a limit on the number of visitors we can receive each day. And also, captains will be prohibited from blowing their whistles unless it's absolutely necessary.
Yeah, that has been the
has that been an issue as well then?
Yeah, they're of course loud. It can startle people if they are blowing them at sort of bedtime hours. Then of course this can create some disturbance. But I mean, it's of course part of letting these ships come in. But of course, I see that. I said that there were doubts that the tourists were good economically, but it's definitely good for the harbors. They of course get enormous income on this. So someone is at least benefiting from this.
Yes. And, you know, we want to show Iceland off. We want it to be available for people to see.
Indeed.
But as ever, it's about striking that balance. If you sell the idea of Iceland or even parts of Iceland as the place where you can come and get some peace and quiet away from other people, then obviously you can't sell that to everyone.
Not at all.
Because then if everyone comes, it's no longer a place of peace and quiet. So it's about striking that balance. But it'll be interesting to see if that does make a difference in the Westfjords. Let's head to the east of the country, where the condition of the roads means that it's not possible to currently load fully some of the lorries that are going through the region, such as milk and salmon and various forms of animal feed, are having to be transported in many different trips because you can't put all the weight into one lorry because the roads are in such a bad condition. I mean, the roads here in Reykjavik are pretty bad at the moment as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
After the winter.
Yeah. This is, of course, always a very delicate time for the roads when the frost is melting from the roads, when it's getting a bit warmer, it can get a bit muddy, and in the asphalt roads you get all these holes and everything, which can damage cars. But of course, in the countryside, this is even worse, because then you have a lot of gravel roads which can easily turn into mud. I don't remember the condition being that bad you can't even move necessary products between places, and since it's becoming that case, there have also always been criticism that the roads, I think it has been regularly ever since after the financial collapse, that the government has saved too much money on maintaining roads. And this sounds like that kind of problem. They don't put enough money on maintaining roads and maintaining to keep them strong enough for this heavy traffic, and that has consequences.
And this is part of Route 1 as well. I mean, we're not talking about some of the more rural roads necessarily. We're talking about Route 1, for example, from Djupavoya to Sturlafjörður, where there's a 10-ton axle limit.
Yeah,
It's 7 tons on gravel roads in other parts around Eilstadur as well, and that's not a very heavy lorry. It's a couple of Range Rovers, isn't it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah,
yeah. But that is serious, and that is something that the government and the Road Maintenance Institute has to look at and do something about, because that is obviously not something that people living in this area can live with. Mm.
Is it today that's the big tyre changeover? Middle of April is when people have to move back onto summer tyres.
Yes.
So a lot of that going on just now. What I'm really finding driving around Reykjavik at the moment is that the roads have got this really weird sort of... It's not that they're potholed, although they are, but you've got this weird kind of track on the roads where there's a dip.
Yeah,
where all exactly. where everyone has been driving in the same part of the road that's pushed the snow down.
Yeah.
It's formed a kind of track that people have driven in.
Yeah.
Do they get flattened out? Do they get repaired?
They get repaired in the summer.
Okay.
So it's kind of... I think I was shaking my head once over this because... The big part of it is that there are still many people that drive on nails, and that is causing, of course,
studded tires.
Yes, exactly. But I think they could maybe make the road where the most traffic is out of something stronger material.
And it doesn't bend.
Yeah, and I thought I think I told someone when I was talking to someone about it. It's like the whole summer is used to prepare the roads for the winters.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like driving on rails. Your wheels are in these ruts. It's like driving in ruts, isn't it, basically?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very odd sensation. But so that in the summer then will be fixed, as you say, just in time for the winter.
Yeah.
Okay, first day of summer coming soon. We'll hold you to that then. Algrimur, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for
taking
me.
Us through the week in Iceland here on RUV English. And I'm Darren Adam. You can get in touch with us anytime. We are english@ruv.is.
There is more from RÚV English with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. RÚV English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.